Good morning. I'm Veronica Rickard, and I'm glad to be with you again today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, ever feel like you use the same threadbare words over and over again, especially superlatives like great and awesome? Well, we've used them so much, they're pretty much bleached of all meaning. Today is our lucky day, though. We've got word maven Arthur Plotnick with us to give us legions of new alternatives to spice up our speech. Today, a jaunt through the world of superlatives. And we're happy to hear from you. What words like great and awesome, what superlatives would you like to see replace great and awesome? Are you tired of those same words? Do you have some favorites that you use in your daily speech when you want to spice things up? And what suggestions would you give the rest of us? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can always chime in on the Kathleen Dunn fan page. Our guest is Arthur Plotnick. He's an author and publisher. His books include Spunk and Bite, A Writer's Guide to Punchier, More Engaging Language and Style, and most recently, Better Than Great, a plenitudinous compendium of wallopingly fresh superlatives. And Arthur Plotnick, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Is this Veronica, the virtuosic valedictorian of cool?
Yeah, I've been called that before.
I'm giving out superlatives today. I got a million.
I saw that. Your book is pretty much addictive reading. It's hard not to keep going down the next one and the next one. You realize, why are we still using great and awesome when there are so many other words?
Well, I think we all tend toward a core vocabulary and the words that come easiest to mind. Some lexicographers say we use these words because they're blurry. They don't commit us to anything. Nobody's going to question you if you say, yeah, that's great. No one's going to say, how great? What great? What do you mean? So these are just kind of verbal sawdust that we fall back on. Also, as babies, we learn by a process called echolalia. I'm sounding very academic. But I did read this, and that means by repeated sounds, we repeat what we hear. But in adulthood, it becomes a pathology called echolalia, where people just repeat helplessly again and again things that they hear. Well, there's kind of a national echolalia everywhere where there's a word of the day, a vogue word, and we grab it.
So do you, now that you've written this book, do you find that you are able to reach down and pull out that unusual word instead of those old standbys?
it takes some effort. I've pretty much managed to get awesome out of my vocabulary. Sometimes I'll just use less used superlative like stellar and stunning. Sometimes if the situation is lighthearted, I'll, say spumescent or concussively brilliant.
I like that one. Mm-hmm.
Get some weird looks, but, it's all according to your audience. But awesome, I just had to get rid of that word. And, I'm speaking tonight in Milwaukee, a talk called Slaying the Abominable Awesome.
All right, and I do want to talk about that event as long as you brought it up. You'll be at Boswell Books Company on Downer in Milwaukee tonight at 7 o'clock, right?
That's right.
So
and
we can see you there.
We've got lots of superlatives for you. But awesome, I don't know. It used to be a great word. Great, did I say? It used to be a very powerful word. It meant inspiring, great reverence and fear, like at the parting of the seas or Shaquille O'Neal coming at you, But now it's used for anything and everything, and so it's lost all its mojo. And now when I hear it, it's like a water torture. Everything is awesome, right? I just looked it up on Google. 639 million hits for awesome.
Whoa.
If you look up awesome and panda, because the new movie Panda is out, Kung Fu Panda, which they advertise as awesome,
right.
Awesomeness, 40 million hits. So
That word did have a good pedigree, though, you're right. But I guess it's kind of lost it the more we use it. It's almost though we just winnow a little bit off every time we use it. But I do have a feeling that just about every print journalist, well, at least I would hope that they'll get a copy of your book and we might be seeing more superlatives, interesting ones, in print in the near future. I have to talk about one of my favorites. And this is, you have your book divided into categories for different kinds of great and awesome. For instance, just generic great. And then you have a category called wicked cool when you want to say something that means that. And one of those words is burly. I love the idea of exclaiming burly about something. Tell us about a few more in that list.
Yeah, it's a funny kind of reverse acclaim. You know, gnarly is one of the older ones that's gnarly. But, you know, the classic one is bad. Man, that car is bad. And, you know, you say these with some attitude. And it's kind of a juvenile thing, but fun for adults to do if they can pull it off and do a few hip-hop moves as they say it. You know, like, man, those shoes are sick. I told you that store was the illest.
I also like acrid. Can you use that one in a sentence for
acrid.
Us? Acrid. To mean wicked cool. Would you say, hey, those shoes are acrid?
Yeah, that tune was so acrid.
That's good. You're right.
Like
you can pull
what
it off.
I saw recently was flu, F-L-U.
Uh-huh.
That's so flu.
That's so flu. God. You know what? I don't think that one's going to catch on.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of these are what they call nonce words. They're used once or twice, and then the novelty's gone, and the word can't hold its own.
Well, from the section about words that just sort of mean a generic kind of greatness, there was one last night that my husband and I both really loved, Fire God Brilliant.
Oh, Fire God Brilliant? Yeah, you know, some people see these. That's a Germanism. In rhetorical terms, where you stack up adjectives and separate them with dashes before a term, like set your hair on fire, beautiful, you know. So some people think they're a little silly and far-fetched or sound insincere or not me, but you got to think of a context. In journalism, if you're talking about Lady Gaga, it might apply.
You know? You could say it, yeah. What are some of your other favorites from that generic great category?
Let's see, from that category, one of my favorites from another category, well, it could be great too. It's mind marmalizing. You know, we have this mind boggling, which has become quite a cliche. But there's so many things you can do to the mind to express that something's had a great effect on you. Had a very powerful effect on you. So you...
Mind marmalizing.
Now, mind marmalizing.
Marmalizing.
It's more British, but it means turning your mind into marmalade.
Yeah, the British have some really good ones, actually. But the only thing with that is that you might sound pretentious if you're trying to drop all these British phrases.
In speech, but, you know, again, the context... if you're in a kind of a campy conversation or situation, and you put a British accent on it, sounds kind of cute. Or I think in writing is where most of the more ambitious superlatives are going to appear, because they'll be in a context that suits it, and you're not seeing a person saying it and judging them. That's the risk of using fresh superlatives, that you're going to be judged not only for what you acclaim, but how you acclaim it. So you're revealing yourself somewhat, which can be a good thing if it's a brilliant superlative, or you can look silly. But that's the risk of expressiveness, right? You want to be heard.
There are some here, let's see, some of the UK ones we were talking
Larky,
about.
Larky, that's another one I like.
Larky. Now, so that just means kind of great?
Larky means... fun. I think that's under joy-giving category.
Larky.
Yeah. Larky, carefree, pleasurable. Larky time.
You also have lists of older words, sort of the golden oldies of great and awesome. And those are fun to look at, too. You sort of see some of them and you automatically think of the World War II era or something, or your grandparents, copacetic. Although that one sort of has a retro appeal, I think, copacetic. People still sort of say that, but I'm thinking of a dilly. That's a dilly of a hat, or a Lulu.
Yeah, they are fun, and they come in and out. When people who haven't heard them hear them, they're very fresh, and I always recommend you to look up some retro words, too, in slang dictionaries. I like the real gazookas. That's the real gazookas.
That's a good one.
The real thing. And a lot of people like rip snitches.
Rip snitches?
Rip snitches. That was one of those fancy words for great.
Kind of like rip snorting.
Yeah, that was rip snitches.
That's a good one.
My publisher likes that. She's always saying, my book is rip snitches.
It is rip snitches. Another one, you've got a whole sort of section on things that are heart blanking.
Pardon me?
Heart and then blanking, so different adjectives or adverbs for what that is. And one is heart brazing. I like that one.
Yeah, that's the section of things that affect the affect you emotionally. And then there's one thing, words that indicate a physical effect. Something is like gobsmacking. It's so impressive. It's like smacking the mouth, smacking the gob. When you create all these categories, you start to appreciate all the things, all the ways all the things that are worthy of acclaim. You know, the categories cool and trendy, forceful, delicious, sublime. So there's all these areas where you could find hundreds of words that acclaim these good, praiseworthy things. It's kind of a balance to all the negativity that you see on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a way of reminding you that there are thousands of words you can make into positives and find all the things that are praiseworthy.
Well, there really are. I mean, I guess I wasn't sure how many you could come up with. I think it showed me that I've been stuck in a kind of rut with my vocabulary, but there really are. There are thousands of words in here, and they're pretty wonderful words.
You only could do it in 3 years.
Right.
It took a lot of word by word going through lexicons and thesauruses, slang thesauruses, hip-hop thesauruses, and, you know, they don't always present the word as a superlative. You have to sometimes create a superlative out of that word, you know, maybe a noun, and you say, well, what does that noun do to you? So you turn it into a phrase.
Why do you think, as a society that's at least in English speakers, we get so hung up on particular words that we just stop looking for other ones?
There's always a word of the day, and I think the word today, even more so than awesome, although it doesn't always bother me as much, is amazing. That gets more hits on Google than awesome, 748 million hits. Everything is amazing, amazing. Those are amazing fingernails. These French fries are amazing. Again, it was a good word once. It was associated with mazes. It came from mazes, meaning in the sense of bewildering. So you're bewildered by something technically when you say amazing. And now it's just a general word of approbation, meaning, slightly of slight interest. It's amazing. You know, Laurie Moore, the author who went to University of Madison.
Yeah, she lives in Madison.
Lives in Madison, yeah. She has a passage in her book, which I'm going to read briefly tonight, where she says, our generation has divided everything into awesome, either sucks or it's awesome.
Oh, sad but kind of true.
Yeah. So, I don't know, we seize on a few of those. So every generation had them. Remember, you know, some of the words for cool that everybody was saying. Groovy. Everything was groovy. That had a good long run.
Right. I mean, in a way, words like that, they are signifiers that you belong to a particular group or a particular time. I mean, they can bring you together as a community. On the other hand, you could see it as if we just rely on those same crutch words over and over again. It's kind of like just eating vanilla ice cream for the rest of your life and never trying chocolate or any of the other flavors.
That's it. You just miss out on the possibilities of language. You know, here we have 600,000 words and all their nuances in the English language. I mean, maybe 100,000, 200,000 are actual words you'd use in the liberal arts. But and what are we sticking to? 8,000, 9,000 when we write, I think, and a couple of thousand when we speak. So you're not experiencing the delight and the nuances and the wit, the fun and the wordplay that language can bring you. Not to mention meaning and being able to confer qualities on things by your language.
You're kind of talking about wanting to start a movement of linguistic diversity. You know, we see that in terms of plants and biology, and maybe we need a linguistic diversity movement. I mean, if we think about a word that might go extinct, it's possible.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a language board like France does to make decrees on language. But if we did, I think they should ban a few words for a while, so that I'd force people to find some alternatives and force them to buy my book. I would like that.
Well, it's a good place to start. Arthur Plotnick is our guest this hour. He's an author and publisher, and his books include Spunk and Bite, and the one we're talking about this hour, it's called Better Than Great, a plenitudinous compendium of wallopingly fresh superlatives. And we're hoping to get to some of your calls next. What superlatives do you love? Maybe you have superlatives that you're sick of that you want to add to the list of great, awesome, and amazing. And tell us about maybe some fresh alternatives you like to use every day in your life. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 12:30, hope you'll tune in for Chapter a Day, Jim Fleming is reading from Twice a Spy by Keith Thompson, What Happens When a Former CIA Agent Can No Longer Trust His Own Mind. That's 12:30's Chapter a Day on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. As we talk about superlatives, we use them every day, but we tend to use the same three about 90% of the time. Words like great, amazing, and awesome. And our guest this hour is here to help us shake things up a little. And his new book is called Better Than Great, a plenitudinous compendium of wallopingly fresh superlatives. And we'll take our first phone call now. We have Judd joining us from Viola. Hi, Judd.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Do you have a word for us?
Two, actually. Robust and narrative. Way overused by the news media.
I kind of like robust.
It's not a bad word, but it's currently just way overused.
Yeah, you might have something there. What do you think, Art?
I like robust. It's in the book. How is it being overused? In what sense? Like
the economy is not very robust.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. The cliches with in that area, the economy are manifold.
Well, give us an alternative to that.
To robust.
For the economy specifically.
Let's see.
Stout.
You're stumping me because I don't have my list in front of me. But if I looked in my list for forceful, I will just come right up with these durable, dynamic, drubbing, fertile. Let's see, flinty, flourishing.
Yeah.
Cranked. How about cranked?
Cranked. Love it. The economy is not cranked. All right. Well, thank you, Judd. Appreciate it, Phil.
No, you can't stop me.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of words to go around. We have a whole hour. Okay, let's go to Kyle in Madison. Kyle, you're next.
My example, two of them actually also would be wonderful and fabulous. Mm. What a wonderful group of words you just gave me. You had a loop group of words. Well, how about, something like diverse? What a diverse group of words you just presented me. Things like that, diverse and wonderful, or not diverse and wonderful, fabulous and wonderful, fabulous cup of coffee. What a wonderful cup of can of Coke I just drank. Those things, those words, we need to be more descriptive in our word selection, and we need to use the accurate words, sort of as he's saying, for the minute. You know, the same word doesn't go for every different type of event you have that you had a good time. It doesn't need to be fabulous or wonderful. Now that fabulous is good and wonderful is not even great.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kyle. Those two are definitely on the top 10 list, I think. What do you think, Art?
Yes, he is a two-right citizen to come up with that. I talk about fabulous. That's the it word in the arts and in a lot of in fashion, especially in fashion. Everything is fabulous, you know, and it's said in kind of a campy way often. And it's worn out, you know. Tweaking of the word, which is one way to freshen up a superlative. You know, that's mondo fabu or fabuloso. But that, too, gets old. I mean, what are you really meaning when you say fabulous? Is it iridescent? Is it inspiriting? Is it haunting? Bedazzling? There's so many words for that. And wonderful, too, is another of about probably a dozen words we use to death. Wonderful, unbelievable, incredible.
I like in the exceptional category, I don't know if these kind of fit with what Kyle was saying, but you've got some like gonzo, and then you've got more of these miracle of the millennium, mouth-gapingly awesome. There you kind of modifying it like you do with fabulous. Not white bread, the muffin is kind of fun. Mother load of awesome.
You can take superlatives and tweak them. And you may want to personify them like, great on a trapeze, something like that. Like all our words, they need intensifiers. If you're going to use them, use a good, strong intensifier. Take an adjective like walloping, strong adjective. It's in my title. You know, wallopingly great. Then you've got some feeling, some texture, some metaphor to it, and you've got a little force or emphasis. Emphasis is what we're at when we describe things, what we're after. And intensifiers give emphasis. We use them for everything now because all words, all our 20 words that we use every day are worn out. I mean, can anyone say full without saying completely full?
Hmm.
We just intensify everything.
Right. There are certain phrases like that. You know, I was thinking the other day about the phrase gaping maw, because it seems like a maw is never not gaping.
Hey.
You never hear about a tightly shut maw.
Yeah, well, these are, you know, redundant adverbs, which are the one kind of adverb you want to avoid. I like adverbs. They tell you the how, the degree and manner of things that you may want to know. It's good information. But if I say, I might be babbling incoherently here, but babbling means incoherent already.
Hmm.
But we always have to add that intensifier.
Right.
Explain it.
Let's get to another
really,
phone call.
Really, very, and so are the most worn out intensifiers. Totally, really, very, and so.
Those are hard to replace, though, aren't they?
Not so hard in writing.
Like, even if you said gobstopping, you might want to say so gobstopping, or really gobstopping.
Mostly we're going to say incredibly, unbelievably.
Yeah.
We're used to that, but no, you just... In writing, you just find a strong verb, make an adverb out of it, you know, an L-Y adverb, so concussively something.
Yeah, that does up the ante. Another call here.
But,
we've
you know,
got
the good word is never easy to find. Never easy to find in writing. We pathetic writers can spend a day trying to find the right word. So in conversation, what you need to do for conversation is pick out about, and I explain this in my book. Pick out about a dozen words you like from the thesaurus or a slang dictionary or both, and just start using them in emails. Just pick out about a dozen alternatives to these overused superlatives and intensifiers. Start using them in emails and tweets, texts, and so on until you get used to them, and you'll break the habit.
It's a great idea. Ways to break out of your word rut.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go to our next phone call now. We have Eric joining us from Oxford. Hi, Eric.
Yes, I had a comment, and basically just saying that the more languages one knows, the more one can understand English, and the people I know who speak different languages, we don't overuse the same words, because when you learn another language, that helps you also understand English. And for languages grow and evolve over time, and English to be a word, English is a world language, but I think in the future it'll be adopting more foreign words, and I think that's good. I think Americans in general need to be more open to other languages, and the Europeans have an advantage over us in that. That's my only comment.
And a good one that is, because I have a few foreign words in the list, but so many of the foreign words have an emphasis and a rhythm, or of course a freshness, because we don't know them, that lends color to our language. Like the other day I just came across the Spanish word asombroso. You know, you can say these words with such energy.
What does it mean?
It means awesome. estupendo, for stupendous. But, you know, compare that the way we say, oh, that's stupendous. Estupendo.
It sounds stupendous.
Yeah.
Right.
You can really hit those syllables.
Let's go to Sarah, joining us from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Well, I want to defend amazing and awesome, because sometimes those are the right word. That those are the right words at the right time, and I'm all for using. I'm all for using a wide range of vocabulary and finding the right word in situations of, well, if you're writing a paper or just any sort of writing, and speaking too. If it's something I'm thinking about, if it's a cerebral thing, but when it's an emotional response to something, I'm not going to sit there and look for a different word. And none of these words you're saying pack the same punch to me that amazing and awesome do. Sometimes it's a visceral response, and that's how you feel about it. And nothing else really expresses just how much you feel about it. And I'm not giving up amazing and awesome. And I use a lot of big words. And I don't like it when people say, oh, don't use big words because you're just showing off. Because sometimes you just need a big word. But I'm never giving up amazing and awesome.
So you don't think if you were in practice with different words that those words might come to mind just as easily and feel right?
maybe, but...
How about refulgent?
Never. No.
All right.
The thing about amazing and awesome, I think it's because they begin with A's, and that's like a more, to me, like a consonant kind of makes you less emotional, whereas a verb, like an ah, is a real emotional sound.
It's a very good point, and I'm not trying to handcuff anybody, because... during the day, I use amazing and fantastic, plenty and great. It's mainly a case of when it really matters. If you're trying to persuade someone or sell something, when you need something fresh and stimulating. But if in a way of venting your feelings, you know, amazing, has a lot of power to it. It has that chance to really stretch out the long A. Amazing. Sometimes people bray it to a point where it's annoying, but these words come from the heart. Nothing wrong in casual use, but I think when you're writing or in any occasion where there's time to pause and think, you may want a little more specific word. Is something, do I want to call somebody awesome? I mean amazing? Or are they enrapturing? You know, I want a more nuance than amazing that gives me. But we shouldn't flagellate ourselves. We should work for the right word when it matters, very sparingly, but just start to explore the possibilities of language.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Sarah, and thanks for sticking up for amazing and awesome. And we'll go to Jim. Jim is next from Sun Prairie. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have one bad word. That's excellent. I think it's overused.
Hmm.
And but I have a favorite word that I've tried to use often when I was reading some old books about the colonial era in British seafaring, the Master and Commander series from Patrick O'Brien. His characters use the word prodigious often in their exclamation of joy or wonderment. And so I try to use the word prodigious as often as I can.
Oh, I like that.
That is a good one. Are there other nautical ones that you can think of, Art?
Are you asking me?
Uh-huh.
Nautical? Yeah. As an intensifier, batting down the hatch is mind-blowing. But excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah, that word became overused when it became kind of a surfboarders, skateboarders word for cool, right? Excellent, man. That was... Dude, excellent.
I feel like that one's sort of fallen out of fashion, though. I don't hear excellent that much.
It killed the freshness or original meaning of the word. But it's, you know, it's you can slip it by if you're just you know, it's just part of a long narrative. I don't think anybody would really bristle at excellent. But I like prodigious as a acclamatory, prodigious man. That author of that nautical series has a wonderful vintage vocabulary. I think I quoted him in the delicious section, something on food. I don't have it on hand, but that's a good example, a good source.
We've got a couple emails here. One from from Saul in Stevens Point, who suggests, how about mind caramelizing? That's pretty good.
Mind caramel.
Or I guess you could take that a step further with the culinary references. How about mind on flambé? And let's see, Teresa in Washburn. We recently spent a month in New Zealand. Down there, when something is considered really cool, they refer to it as sweet as, but they don't use a noun at the end of the phrase, just sweet as. That's nice.
Sweet as, I have that one. Yeah, that is a good one. You know, Australia and New Zealand have a ton of good slangy explanations. Fair dinkum. She must know that one, too. Or the emailer must know that one.
Hmm.
That's fair dinkum.
Fair dinkum.
Means, I think, means righteous. Fair, good.
And righteous is a pretty good one.
Which one?
Righteous.
Righteous. Yeah. Too right. It's a jazz one. That's too right.
Too right. Well, let's take our second break here as we talk with Arthur Plotnick. He is an author and publisher. His books include Spunk and Bite, A Writer's Guide to Punchier, More Engaging Language and Style, And most recently, the book we're talking about today, Better Than Great, a plenitudinous compendium of wallopingly fresh superlatives. And we're interested to hear your favorite superlatives this hour, and maybe some that you think we need to kind of push out the back door. Time to bring some fresh new ones in. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this Tuesday morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn. This hour, we're talking superlatives with our guest, Art Plotnick. His book is called Better Than Great. And going back to our phone lines, Jim is with us from Hudson. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. Enjoying your show.
Great. I mean, I'm blanking. Go ahead.
I was in England last year, and the three big words that they used over there constantly were massive, iconic, and brilliant. And they used brilliant for excellent. Like, if you had great trout fishing, mm-hmm. you had brilliant fishing. And iconic, I think they actually used in its actual meaning, but everything else was massive. Anything that was bigger or better or more important, it was massive.
Yeah. That's just massive. Massive. Brilliant.
They sound fresh to us, but are those the British equivalents of great and awesome? I mean, they sound fun, but what do you think?
Yeah, they're fresh to us. Anytime, you know, it's a little fresh to us, what the heck? Use them. They use whizzy a lot, too, don't they? Whizzy. It was whizzy. Or maybe the kids do that.
There was a word, I taught middle school, and so I was always up on the slang, and the one word that I thought was really nifty, because it was a really neat word, but it never lasted very long, was gnarly.
They used gnarly.
Gnarly. Like,
did that start here, or with the surfers, or?
I think it was a West Coast thing, yes.
Yeah.
So you'd say, like, oh, gnarly car, you know?
Yeah, that's now a kind of a wicked cool, a reverse.
There you go. That's from the other coach. Wicked good.
That's right.
That's me.
Wicked good. Yeah. Heinously good.
Seems like surf culture and skateboard culture have a lot of good usages. That's where burly comes from. I think that's a surf word, isn't it?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's all I was going to say. And I want to thank you, Jim. Thank you for your call and for the massively good words there. And we'll head on to Heidi, joining us from Ripon. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
Do you have a favorite superlative?
Well, I have one that my grandmother uses often that I thought was rather humorous. To describe something good, she says it was like a pregnant idea. And I'd like to hear that used more often.
Like a pregnant pause.
Yeah, just a very good term. And I also had a quote that hit me really hard when I was in school by George Orwell, kind of on the topic, saying the slobbliness of our language makes it easier for us to have foolish thoughts.
That's a really interesting quote. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was accurate given the conversation today.
What do you think, Art? Do you like that quote?
I do love it. I had all foolish thoughts before I started this book. All my thoughts were foolish. Now they're coruscatingly brilliant.
What about...
You know, may I just indulge in a little spirit of the stairs, as they say, what I would have said before I left the room? The British love these paradoxical superlatives, like shamefully kind... Mm. You know, grotesquely beautiful. It's a fun rhetorical device called oxymoron, where it seems to be contradictory, but it still gives some force because we know what it means. You know, she was criminally gorgeous. I'll talk about this tonight.
Okay. Well, thank you, Heidi. And I like the pregnant suggestion there, too.
Yeah, that's in the whole fructuous category. I have several terms that suggest
productivity and fertility.
Mm, can you give us a couple more examples? I don't know if I can find it in your book that fast.
Yeah. I have 6,000 swirling in my head. It's hard to pick out one, but not the fructuous. I like jacinth, which is a botanical term meaning growing up fast and straight.
Jacinth.
Yeah.
That's nice. That is a good one. Well, thank you, Heidi. And we move to Gene joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Gene.
Hey, good morning. And to you and your guest.
And to you.
Hello.
I trust Kathleen is all right.
I'm sure she's fine. I think she's probably having a pretty good week.
Good. I'm glad she's taking time. I'm going to come across as being just a smidgen offended. It seems to me that if you're engaging in conversation or in writing, it is the writer or the speaker who has a responsibility to convey the message to the recipient. And therefore, many of these words, which are basically adjectives, don't necessarily meet that criteria. For instance, and I'm sure you're aware of this. We've had a lot. We listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. It is heaven. Guests have been on Wisconsin Public Radio and many, many other shows where the primary words they use are, you know, if I knew, you wouldn't have to tell me. And then the word cool. I'm very, very old. When I was growing up, the word was hot. Mm-hmm. And that indicated some qualities in the people you're talking about. And now it's cool, and I don't know whether the people we're talking about are ice cubes or have frozen out in a Wisconsin winter. So I guess my point is that you have many, many, many words in your book. I'm sure it is a delightful read and a reference book. But on the other hand, having been a professor, mm-hmm. getting people to communicate correctly is almost a full-time job. So I'd like your comments on the fact that I don't think we need anywhere near the number of words, and also words like cool and, kind of a, you know, this is trash in the English language, and I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Okay, thank you. An art, we have a purist there in Gene. What's your response?
Well, I think I respect that point of view, and I think message, it's very important to get your message across. That's why we communicate. But it involves not only clarity, but texture, nuance, image, association, all those things under the surface are often what deliver the message more than the literal words of a small, confined vocabulary. So, you know, you can overdo something so that you call attention to the words instead of your message, and you go off message. That's why it's so hard to find the bon mot, the right word. It's not for sissies. If you want to be safe, just speak in cliches. If you want to be take some chances, be expressive and persuasive. If you want to confer value on the things that you think are worthy in a way that stimulates people, you got to be adventurous. You know, the one when he said I love public radio. It's heaven. That gave me a message more than, you know, that little metaphor probably triggered more message than his subjects and verbs. But, you know, slang is a matter of taste. And what's offensive to one is very endorphining to another.
And along those lines, we have an email here from Jeff in Madison who says, to what extent is our loss of adjectives related to a Hemingway-esque view of the world in which we were taught to tone it all down? The sky was blue, the water was cold, the wine was fine.
Yeah, I'm ready for that one. Hemingway, you know, because he did find a way of reducing his style, certain elements and strong nouns and verbs, started this whole business about adjectives and adverbs bad. Just not true. And when Hemingway needed a good adjective, he used it. Paris was... Did he say Paris was a feast? What does that mean? Paris was a movable feast. Gave it all the meaning he meant, because wherever you are, you'll have Paris. Right? That one little adjective has lived on right up to the Woody Allen movie, Paris. So, while a clean style can be wonderful if you can pull it off, it shouldn't mean one thing or the other. Shouldn't ban modifiers. Modifiers give us information and texture. There.
All right, well said. We'll go to our next caller, Annie, with us from La Crosse. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Say, I was going to vote for Wicked Good, but I can't stand the word sweet, and I think it came from Wayne and Somebody's Great Adventure. And
sweet?
It's a superlative. They use the word sweet. You know, oh, that's sweet, which means it's good.
Wayne and Garth.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was. And I just can't stand it. And then I listen to a lot of books on CD, and the British used to use ejaculate a lot for coming out with something amazing from their mouths, you know, talking and becoming excited. And that has, I guess, fallen by the wayside, too.
Yeah, that has some...
Yeah, it has other connotations, too.
Other unsavory connotations for some, yeah. Although it's nature. But, yeah, sweet, I think, has run its course as a word of general approbation. It's another kind of non-slang term. I like David Foster Wallace's intensified sweet. He called something knee-bucklingly sweet. Knee-bucklingly sweet.
Yeah, he was really good at that kind of thing.
You can feel that, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks for that call. We go next to Lynn, joining us from Eau Claire. Welcome, Lynn.
Good morning.
Morning.
I had to check. Here in our house, we use a superlative phrase that we just kind of picked up from a comedy routine about 30 years ago. The comedian, it was pre-Craig Ferguson, pulled out a monkey puck, but at the end, and said, how do you top the monkey? So when one of us here has performed something extraordinary, we say that we have topped the monkey. And it's right now, you know, we just have this little enclave that uses it, but my children and my grandchildren, and that's how, you know, phrases, I'm sorry, guy, you know, that's how phrases progress. English is a progressive language. That's my thing.
All thank right.
You. I love that, Tops the Monkey. I've written it down. I'm going to use it in my next edition with your permission. What is your name?
Hey.
You want to give your name off the air, Lynn? Her name is Lynn. Do you need a last name?
It's Jess Goviak.
Okay, I'll get it right. Thank you, Lynn.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn.
Bye now.
Tapping the monkey. And David with us next from Stoughton. And David, we're just about out of time, so if you could make it very brief.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, we are. Can you make it quick?
I wanted to share a proverb and a personal driving wheel. The proverb is from Kakuzo Okakura, 18th century Japanese scholar. Nothing is real to us but hunger. It's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And a short phrase I use for my own personal driving wheel is a relentless authenticity.
Great. Thank you so much for those. And we're going to leave it there because I also want to say that you can see our guest, Arthur Plotnick, in Milwaukee this evening at 7 o'clock at Boswell Books Company on Downer Avenue. That's tonight at 7 o'clock. And Art Plotnick, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure. I think the show just topped the monkey.
It's a high compliment. Thank you very much.
Give me my phrase of the week. Thank you so much, Veronica.
Art Plotnick, the author of Better Than Great. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and for answering your phone calls, and Chrissy Pease as well. Have a burly day.